Welcome to Factually Speaking, where we expose the BS one show at a time with your host, Alan Campbell. Take a breath and dive right in to the show where facts matter more than feelings.
Hi, Tony. Good to have you on board. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Alan. How are you?
Yeah, very good, very good. So, Tony, I know that you're a bit of an expert in cryptocurrency and central bank digital currencies. To be honest, I've been interested in cryptocurrency for quite a while, but I don't really know that much about it. I know sort of a lot of concepts, but not a lot of the technical detail. And lately, I've been much more interested in the central bank digital currency, which I find absolutely fascinating and kind of scary. But before we get into that, I guess it'd be good to get a bit of an introduction from yourself, who you are, what you're doing with DeFi Freedom. Just tell us about yourself and what you're doing.
Great. Well, my name's Tony Knight. I call myself Krypton Knight as a bit of a little play on words. I started in business for myself about 30 years ago. After a lot of travel, I decided I wanted to do a business that was kind of more humanitarian based and service based. And I've had lots of ups and downs throughout business. And then I started researching the Federal Reserve and the wider economic system, the macro economics. In around 2010, after the last major global crash, I got wiped out off the board pretty much. I just started really getting interested in how money works, where it comes from. And, you know, obviously I uncovered a few Pandora's boxes that really actually shocked me at first. And then as I went along, and then crypto came across my awareness. In 2013, I found out about Bitcoin, and I dismissed it as just a fad. In 2015, then I really came across it again, and I thought, now this time I really need to do a deeper dive. And I got hooked in quite deep, and spent pretty much that whole year researching. Then I started buying some Bitcoin and Ethereum in 2016. And then I was off on the journey, you know. And then when COVID hit in 2020, I was like, oh, here we go. Because, you know, in all this 30 years of self-employment, I've also been basically researching the matrix and how the whole global system, geopolitics, basically everything that sort of, from all the conspiracy theories to researching things like the economy, really fascinated me. And then with COVID, I just see this is the beginning of the end of our current world system. And I was well and truly into crypto by then, and it expanded my portfolio quite substantially. And so in the time we had at home, I got busy really researched it even deeper, and just was basically watching videos and reading stuff for hours each day. And then I had the idea to start an education based business. So DeFi Freedom was formed out of COVID. It took till August last year, August 2021, when we went through that fairly intensive 3 or 4 month thing when we actually officially launched. And we haven't really looked back since. It's an education and community based platform. The money side of it is not our primary goal. It is, to us, it's secondary to simply sharing information and trying to help people navigate what we think is a very dangerous and challenging time in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. So DeFi Freedom is DeFiFreedom.nz. Have I got that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, fantastic. So just on Bitcoin for a minute, I mean, Bitcoin's obviously had a lot of ups and downs. And I guess there's a few people that think it's incredibly dangerous and possibly a bit of a scam. What do you say to that?
I think Bitcoin, when it came out and its code, it's the code that came out. I mean, when Bitcoin came out, it was also the blockchain. They created the blockchain to enable Bitcoin to come. And that basically enabled the whole space to then develop because it's open source technology. So that was majorly groundbreaking. This was a huge moment I see it as a huge leap forward for technology, whether for good or bad. It could be used for both. Bitcoin is being heavily manipulated. You cannot manipulate the code. That is immutable. What's on the blockchain stays on the blockchain. It cannot be changed. But Bitcoin is, and I don't believe Bitcoin will go to zero, like some people say, but Bitcoin is being manipulated from the inside, and the cabal have certainly got their claws into it. They can manipulate it by pumping and dumping. In other words, buying up large and then selling large. And I believe they were involved in that big Terra Luna crash.
Right.
Talk about that, because that's another major signal that things are going to get very hot very soon. But Bitcoin is an enigma in that it doesn't have a real use case. The use case was put your money here and find safety from the banks, and let's bring the system down. And there was a lot of anarchists type behavior, but I don't believe that's the way to you're playing on their turf, and they will take you out if you try to play the sort of direct attack game. And they knew you cannot take the blockchain down. So the cabal are controlling it through creating different associations and different centralized financial instruments like these future exchanges, spot exchange. Basically, it's just bringing the casino all around Bitcoin. And then by manipulating the price, that gives it the appearance that it is fully controlled. And also, it's mined, as we know, it's mined by huge server farms. Those potentially could be a weak point for Bitcoin, the miners. We don't know who they are. We don't know who they're controlled by. So there is some question mark around that.
Okay.
But, you know, they'd have to take all the miners off. They had to have at least 51% of all the mining in order to really take it down. And so whether they can get that consensus when people are scattered all around the world, I don't know.
If they stop the mining, though, that wouldn't actually stop the or impact the existing Bitcoin, would it?
I'm not actually sure about that. It needs, I think the miners, they need the miners to enable the network. I think so, yeah. But what they can do is they fork off. I mean, when they've had arguments before, that's how Dogecoin it's called, is a fork of Bitcoin. Litecoin is a fork of Bitcoin. That means that they basically, because it's open source, they can take their code and then they can tweak it and make something that can be quite different, but basically is the same.
Okay.
The Bitcoin blockchain, it's not all created equal. There isn't just one blockchain. And so this is where I think a lot of people make mistakes. They think, the blockchain is just a one thing, and no matter whether it's Bitcoin, Litecoin, or Ethereum, it's all blockchain, so it's all the same. They're not. They can be created and adapted to be extremely private to extremely centralized, or extremely decentralized to extremely centralized, and everything in between.
So there's going to be a whole lot of people listening that have very little idea of what a blockchain actually is. You able to explain it in fairly simple terms?
So in simple terms, blockchain is just a digital ledger of recording debits and credits, or transactions, if you like, in this case, money coming in, money going out. So just think of an accounting ledger that's put into a very, very secure place that records every transaction forever. And those transactions cannot be gone back on and rewritten or overwritten or deleted in any way. It is absolutely secure from that point of view.
So what makes it so secure?
Just because of the encrypted, I mean, crypto comes from encryption, and it's so secure because of the nodes. Well, nodes are validators. In the case of Bitcoin, it's the miners. There's other types of blockchain that are work in a different way. There's proof of stake is the main other one. Where people get a node, and then basically their computer becomes a validator of the network, so that everyone is always in consensus, so that you can't destroy a blockchain unless you took all the nodes down or tried to hack all the nodes all at the same time in the exact same second.
Right. Okay. So you've got effectively bits of codes on different computer, and they will need to line up for it to work.
Exactly right. So that's probably nigh on impossible. Plus you've got your private keys, you get self-custody of your own money, and then you get what they call a seed phrase, which is apart from your regular password, you also get 12 word passwords, which and then that money that you have in your wallet is not on an app on Google or on Apple. It's an app that's only a window showing your tokens that are on the blockchain. It's like a window into the blockchain. So a lot of people say, well, you know, Google or Apple could just simply, you know, get access to your funds. No, they can't. It's not possible.
Okay.
So the blockchain is basically a, you know, block, meaning they fill a block, or they fill up so many transactions to a block, and then it creates this link to another block, and it will go on and on forever. So it's self-replicating. It has autonomy. It has a much higher degree of privacy. It's not just for money. It's for information. It can be for anything, any kind of information. I know social media platforms that are building on the blockchain. They're looking at doing voting on the blockchain. They're looking at creating any business could effectively, instead of building on the website, what they're doing now is they're building their business on the blockchain. And it is happening at great speed, although you wouldn't know it. But what's happening underneath beyond our awareness, there is a tremendous amount of momentum and activity going on with crypto and the blockchain and decentralized finance, which is what our DeFi stands for too. It's short for decentralized finance.
Right.
And I know there's a lot of projects that are being built out, not necessarily to take on the existing system, simply building a better system that is for the people, by the people, and that is what will bring down, I think, ultimately, build a better system, and the existing system that's not serving will just die of its own accord. And but in saying that, there's a lot of obviously a lot of nefariousness going on. There's a lot of scams, and the cabal are also, while they're building, you know, like we know, we can, the CBDC is their own project, which is centralized bank digital currency. So it's really just a simple tweak of what we've already got. We've already got a digital money system. When they talk about money printing, they're not printing the actual money. Yeah. They're creating the money through debt on a computer. So when people go in the bank and they want a mortgage, they want a loan, that's how they bring money into existence. Debt underpins all money printing. And that is has to have a shelf life or a use-by date. And we're at that use-by date. That's why the cabal need blockchain and crypto more than what we people would need it. They need it more in their mind because their system is on its last legs. They've overprinted the money so much to the point where they're killing their own system. The debt's got so high that, yeah, they can keep it going, but it's only digging a deeper hole for themselves. So this is actually a positive thing and a negative thing. So there's a fair amount of information there, but it's like any technology, it can be used for good or bad, and we just have to have good people participating enough to enable us to create. We're basically creating a breakaway society or breakaway economy.
Right. So you mentioned businesses using blockchain. What are some of the use cases that they might have for it?
For practically anything you can think of that businesses are doing now, blockchain will have a use case for. The early ones are property. You can buy fractionalized property. You can have your property title in that in the blockchain, or you could go into a syndicate. You get syndication is happening all the time in blockchain, where little people like us can buy a token, buy a crypto token, and that's effectively like a digital asset share in the asset. So the crypto, yes, it's digital, and people say, well, it seems very nefarious, but the best projects are the ones that are connected to real off-world assets. So we see with the stock market, that's very nefarious. The derivative market, the bond market, all these financial instruments in our existing system, they are extremely centralized. They're all very, very controlled. And basically, it's a closed shop to small people like us. But with blockchain and with particularly decentralized finance-styled blockchains, people can be the venture capitalists. We can be the new shareholders. We can buy the token. You're buying a digital asset as well as something that acts like a currency. That is really quite profound. So we can get in on the ground floor. We can build our own projects from the ground floor up. So it's coming up from underneath. Yes, we see is what's happening at the top down. No one ever gets to see what's coming from bottom up. And that's essentially what is happening all across the world at double the speed of development and participation of the internet in the 1990s, to put that into perspective.
Wow. I hadn't appreciated that. Just coming back to the real world assets, I guess. I mean, if I use a blockchain to purchase a share of a house or something, that still needs to be under existing law and existing lien titles and things like that, though, doesn't it? So how do they tie together?
Well, the platform itself, the project, they basically control it. I don't know the exact details. I just know it's happening. Right. No one has, that I know of, is no one can buy a house outright on it yet. But, I believe it has started actually in the States. but I'm not actually, to be honest, I'm not a party to how the title and all that, but they are doing it, and it is legit, and I can send some websites where you can dig in, and you can literally scroll through a site which shows all these properties for sale that people can buy either outright or you can buy as a syndicate.
Well, okay.
And yeah. I guess because the blockchain is so secure, I guess maybe they're issuing the title on the blockchain. They must be.
Okay, great. Send those through. I'll include them in the show notes. Be great. Appreciate that.
But other use cases is insurance, car ownership, supply chain. And look what's happening in our supply chain now. It's falling apart. But with the blockchain, it's really far more secure for tracking and tracing. But, you know, not necessarily us. I mean, obviously, the cabal have an idea of that. But that you can track your goods, where it is. It can come with GPS-type technology. But many, many businesses are simply creating their own. You can create your own ecosystem with a few clicks of a mouse now. And you create your own currency. People want to buy it. You have a convincing business plan. And people are creating charities on the blockchain. They're creating environmental cleanup projects. Social clubs are going on the blockchain. You've got this whole NFT explosion, so artists, musicians, anyone who has intellectual property, fantastic for the blockchain. And it really, like I said, it's eventually going to sweep through the world, and everything will be known as tokenized. So every product and service eventually will be tokenized, where you have to buy it. You know, you have an option to buy it with the crypto. I think cash will hang around for quite some time yet. And we're not just going to go to a cashless society overnight. It's not going to be like, bang, we've got cash in our existing system now, and then tomorrow we wake up and that's all gone. It's going to be quite a few years of transition involved here. And what I see happening is, there will be the centralized system as we have today, and there will be another system that's very decentralized, where a whole new parallel economy is, and it's already started at pace, and it will build up, and it will be a serious rival to the centralized system. We'll run parallel for some time, and there will be projects that bridge that. There will be bridges and tunnels created to join the two at certain places. We just don't know how that's going to look like it in the real world.
So slightly off topic, I guess, but you've mentioned the cabal a couple of times. Do you want to just give us a bit of an outline on who they are, in your opinion, and what they're doing?
Cabal and my, they're intergenerational generational families that have held the wealth for many hundreds of years or even thousands of years. They've traced their lineage back. They believe that the earth is basically theirs because, you know, their ancestors were the bigwigs back in the day. And, you know, we know the Rothschilds. Yep. They created banking, basically. The Rothschilds took down the Bank of England back in the 1600s. And from that day on, and then they basically ran and controlled the royal family and the Vatican through money, through loans, through ownership, basically, because that's how they operate. And then and the other various families through the different families, there's a whole heap of them. The Lee family, the Astor family, the the Morgans, and the the usual, the Rockefellers, all of these sort of guys. They have their own think tanks. They have their own you know, they created the United Nations, they created the WEF, and they, but I believe there's other people behind them who are pulling the strings, who we don't see or we know who they are. But basically, they own 90% of the resources of the world through monopolization, a massive monopolization through BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Fidelity. These are hedge funds that are so big. They are sucking in all the investor funds, and they have ownership, shareholding ownership in all the key industries in the world, and all they own them outright. So, and then they have this very complex subsidiary system that goes all the way down, right down to New Zealand as well. You can look at Nestle, you look at our key food companies, energy companies, pharmaceutical. They could follow the trail, follow the money all the way back to the same, you know, players.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, particularly with companies like BlackRock, when you look at what they own, it's astonishing, really. There's not much that they don't own these days.
No, there isn't. Yeah. Either they have ownership of or they have control of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the simple fact that they've got the ability to choose what to invest in or pull their money out gives them an enormous amount of control over companies.
They're controlling our KiwiSaver. They control the pension funds. They control just about all the money.
Yeah.
And they even advise the Federal Reserve. They are sitting behind there. Yes, I believe they are also pulling strings on the Fed and even the IMF. And then you've got the Bank of International Settlements as well, which is at the central bank of central bankers. And they are really a powerful group as well, very, very powerful.
Okay. Well, I don't really want to turn this into a history lesson, but I'm not sure. You mentioned the 1600s and the Rothschilds taking down the Bank of England. Do you know much about that at all? Because I haven't really heard about that previously.
It was all around the Napoleon War, and when Napoleon supposedly was, you know, they used couriers. Basically, there were loans, and they were waiting to find out, you know, who had won the war. Of course, Napoleon lost the war, but the message went out that he had won the war, and of course, they had. Their stock market of the day had all the money, or the Bank of England had all its money on those industries in England that, basically, however their ownership was, basically because it was false, because the Rothschilds had bought up a huge amount of shares in certain companies, basically the Bank of England just lost its shirt through a trade.
So that was based on the Battle of Waterloo, was it? Or was it the first time around?
I think it was the Waterloo. The second time.
It was basically some fake news on the outcome of the battle.
Yes, basically fake news, exactly.
Wow. Exactly right. Interesting. Hadn't heard that before. That's fascinating. Thank you. In terms of the central bank digital currency, I guess there's a couple of aspects to this that strike me. One is how can crypto survive if governments move against it? We've seen China do it, for example. And that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it that I'm really interested in is what could governments actually do and control with a central bank digital currency?
So that again.
So I guess the first aspect that, I mean, if we talk about cryptocurrency in general to start with,
yeah,
can it survive if governments move against it? We've seen China try and outlaw or ban different types of cryptocurrency.
I don't believe they can. No, I think crypto will survive, but there will be a lot of casualties and there will be collateral damage, but they can't take it all down. I mean. They cannot touch their blockchains unless they got backdoor access, and some of them have that. But there will be many losers, but there will be the crypto will only get stronger, I believe. And ultimately, as people realize when they realize the difference between what we can potentially get and what we've got now. And when they realize that if when they've had a taste of something good, people are going to want more of it. And I think there's going to be some very solid projects that will survive and thrive, and then eventually it will just spread like a, you know, like a virus, if you like. Yeah. But yeah, there is going to be a lot of chaos and carnage coming with their regulations, but they can only regulate on ramps and off ramps. They can only regulate the entry point in or the exit point. But ultimately, I think crypto and decentralized finance will get to the point where you won't need or want to exit, because it will be a self-fulfilling, self-sustainable economy within its own right.
Okay.
We fear this, what the central bankers can do, and that, and yes, they have certain power, but they're fading power. All the stuff we see on the is all noise, and they've still got their media pretty much up there doing their job. But I think that they are basically losing myself. But, you know, they beware an enemy that's wounded.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that, I guess, basically, do you think we're in for a economic collapse, particularly in the Western world?
Yeah, because of a lot of factors, not least of the Russia-Ukraine thing. But, yes, I think basically there's a systemic collapse coming. And so monetarily, yeah, I think we're in for some pain. It could be inflation, hyperinflation, potentially. But I believe that in some areas they're going to weather the storm a lot better. Ironically, I think because of crypto, because they could bring their system up and move to that fairly quickly. But it's going to be different in every different place. I mean, it's going to be quite chaotic. But yeah, I see a lot of pain coming. People, particularly at the lower demographic, people who are reliant already on the government, are going to be hit by these high prices, or food that's just not even available, or, you know, people in the middle class as well are going to be hurt. They're already getting hurt. You know, COVID was the forerunner to it. And so it won't be just monetary. It'll be a social, financial, geopolitical, and health kind of crisis that makes it very, very difficult. But we don't know how it's going to look. But basically, put it this way, I mean, fiat money, cash, basically, government decreed money, that's what fiat means. It's on its last legs. And the only thing they've got, the only tools they've got, they can either produce more money, they can tighten, what they call tighten, which means they buy debt, buy their own debt back. That's called tightening. And that's only going to exasperate the situation even more, because we are within a heroin addict. What they need is more heroin to keep them going, right? The system is like that. Or what they do is they raise interest rates, and with the amount of debt in the world, that's just like throwing petrol on a fire. Or they can reduce interest rates, but they've already had interest rates at near zero for so long. So they basically are working on a linear binary kind of way. And we're in a multi-dimensional energetic world where there's other factors at play that could just won't respect that, and it could break at any time. And if it broke, you could see a potential domino effect go through the system that could bring governments down and cause potentially quite a lot of civil unrest.
Yeah, it's certainly pretty scary. And I think one of the things I've always been aware of is that the entire system could literally collapse overnight. Yeah. You know, we've seen it come close previously. And I'm not sure that this time they've got the tools necessary to stop it happening. So it's going to be a particularly fascinating time, that's for sure. I guess, and I guess this is really where we're reliant. If people are going to move towards cryptocurrencies in particular, there has to be a mass of people and businesses doing it, because you actually need to be able to tie up to real world goods. So for me, for example, if I want to go and buy some vegetables or some steak or something, if steak's going to cost me $800 a kilo because of inflation, is that something that crypto could potentially help with?
Yeah, absolutely it could. When it's left to its own devices, it's only because of the central control that it really clouds it. I mean, I already know there's one project here in New Zealand that's where you'll be able to buy goods, you'll be able to sell and buy using the crypto. It's linking consumers or buyers to merchants and growers, and it's a self-contained system that has the legal clarity. So that's an option. It's still not yet been adopted in mass cases for stores and buying food and buying necessities like that, but it is being accepted in many, many online businesses around the world, and it's working its way into the ground floor, if you like. And but there's other things that we can do. I've got a card, I've got a couple of cards where I could put crypto on it. I could convert it by going in my back office. I could convert it to cash, and I can use a card that's come from my crypto. It might not take it from crypto direct, but it's just a little transaction you do, and then you can buy and sell using your crypto proceeds. We have in DeFi Freedom, we've just got a merchant account now for a company based in Switzerland that is a fiat crypto gateway. And I can store my money there. I can send money anywhere around the world. And I can send my crypto there, and then I can convert it to any denomination of euro, US dollars. And I can use the card here in New Zealand. So it's getting very close. And there's a lot of big institutions that are accepting crypto now. So it seems like a slow moving train, but when you've been down deep into it like I have, you can see it's coming very, very fast. And there will be a moment in time where you don't see much about crypto, and then all of a sudden it's going to be everywhere. All of a sudden, I think the bigger institutions, even the banks themselves, now they're caught between a rock and a hard place. You think about it, if it's central bank digital money, what are the banks going to do, the regular retail banks? So that what's doing is that's driving them to start adopting crypto themselves. Yeah. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where the more that they get involved in it, the more that it's going to, more people are going to flock to it, the more it's going to just push everything all in the same direction.
To me, it seems if you can work pretty much entirely in crypto and you don't have to convert it back to fiat currency, then that could potentially help with a bunch of issues around inflation and things like that, depending how it works, I suppose. But on the flip side of that, there's a risk that actually the whatever cryptocurrency comes out on top effectively becomes a world currency, and nations actually lose their sovereign currency.
I think that talking about world currencies, they're coming, and I know pretty much, I think I know what they're going to be as well. It's called XRP and XLM, Stellar and XRP, Ripple.
I've heard of Ripple, yeah.
Yeah, well, Ripple is the company behind XRP. That's the currency. And they created a system called ISO 20022. That is like a messaging system between banks that is exactly what Swift is. And they have created a digital version of it. It's already got a few people signed up to it, including XRP, Stellar, and about four others. And that is due for launch in early November this year. So that's going to be initially, it's ultimately going to replace Swift, I believe. Swift, the Swift bank transfer system.
Right, and okay.
So I think, though, that there could well be, like in America, I hear a lot of talk about a new US currency, a fiat, you know, a cash currency that's backed by gold, or potentially XRP could be backed by gold. And they are going to bring real, intangible, real-world assets to link to some of these currencies, I believe. They have to, really, because what Russia is doing by masterstroke backing their ruble by gold, that is absolutely sent the fear of God through those guys. And so they know, and the ruble has actually been one of the strongest currencies so far this year, believe it or not.
It's performing, I see, yeah.
So that is setting a precedent that's going to be very interesting to watch. And I know the BRICS countries are very much in favor of getting off the US. See, the big thing is the US dollar, the reserve currency of the world, because there's trillions of it. There's more dollars outside of America than there is inside America. And that's a real problem, right? It's a problem, and it's also it's positive and negative for those countries. It's positive in the sense that, you know, they're holding still the reserve currency and it's quite strong. But it could be very, very negative if the system really implodes and if the US dollar goes down with it. Those countries are going to feel a lot of pain. And China is the biggest holder. It's got trillions of US dollars. So if that just turns to, you know, toilet paper overnight, oh my God, then you're going to have. See, the thing is, the system has been created in such a way that it's led us off the edge and is no going back. There's no fix. You can't go back and make it better because it's so inherently bad. But there's nothing they can do going forward to, you know, they can't go forward and stay in a level of relative prosperity that we had. It's going to have to die of its own death. It has to. It's falling on its own sword. So that moment, I believe, when the real crunch comes is now probably another couple of years away, 2024. But between now and then, I think we're going to go through a drawn-out period of CBDCs or stable coins. I think they'll probably go for the digital dollar first before CBDCs, because they're in they've got a lot of danger with them in their CBDC. It's not all going to be a bed of roses because there's so much pushback. There's so many people that all it's going to do is drive them towards crypto, the very thing they don't want. So the more they will try and push it, the more that they could end up losing. Why? Because no one trusts them. And if there's a real option in crypto, people will go to it anyway. Even if people think it's bad, they'll rather go there than have another round of bollocks with a central bank digital currency.
So, I mean, the current system, the way it is, talking about how it's unrecoverable. Do you think it was always destined to reach this point, or is it something that countries and governments have done that's made it get to this point? Because it strikes me as a system, it wasn't a bad system, but somehow it's gone off the rails.
Opinion is it was always inherently going to die. They know it. And this is how they've kept control of the world for years, because normally when they're already getting prepared to do the next reset. They've been resetting the economy over and over for centuries. I think that they thought that they could I believe they want digital currency. They created, or at least had a major hand in Bitcoin, or at least they knew it was happening and they let it go because they wanted it. And then I think they thought they could back themselves to then usurp it and basically just, you know, pummel us and just bring it on in. Because a system that's based on debt, whenever you produce a dollar, you've got a dollar of debt, and we are the guarantors of that, is not a system that's going to have a long life. Yeah, in the early days it was great, but that was because we were producing stuff. That's because we were actually making stuff. That was because we had low debt. We had a much, you know, we even back in the day, the US dollar was backed by gold. And then they took it off the gold standard, and they made the petrodollar. And that held okay for a while. But now once they took the brakes off, once they unbacked it by gold, they could print as much as they want. And that was basically the beginning of the end.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess when you tie that in with the political side as well, where populations demand more and more benefits without the country actually being able to produce more, then you, it certainly doesn't help.
That's exactly right. Their own system is going to be the system that's made them so much money and so much power is the same system that's going to be their demise. Because, you know, eventually it's like a pendulum swing. There's a natural law, hermetic law, the law of polarity. And they say that the pendulum swing, the measure of the swing of the pendulum to the left is the measure of the swing to the right. In other words, the more bad a system gets in one way, say in a negative way, the more propensity it will have to go the other way. And I think that pendulum is now sliding from their peak has been reached, and now it's swinging back towards the people's way. It's what I believe. But it's slow and it's demographic based. It's over a longer period of time. And, you know, we don't see it because we're not so in touch with the bigger view, the long-term time spans. We don't understand history. If you go back into history, the history of money is fascinating. And, you know, it's always been at the center of all rises and falls of empires throughout millennia. And it's always the same thing that crashes them. Greed, their lust for power, excessive debt, and then and a population that rises up, or you could say awakens. Only this time, I think the awakening is a lot more profound than in previous years. And so the reset this time, they have real competition and other technologies in the hands of new money, not old money. Old money's always run the world. New money's now out there. Ironically, again, because of their system. Some people did very well out of it. And now they're using that money to essentially try and take control themselves. But I don't believe it's quite the same degree of control. And there's other factors at play, like technology is playing a huge part, not just blockchain, but other technologies, health technologies, energy technologies, all kinds of other technologies, along with an awakening population. That makes for a very powerful recipe for a whole new start. A new earth, a new do-over. And I'm only just looking at cycles. I look back in the history and I look at the cycles. I look at all kinds of cycles. And, you know, we've got an aging population. We've got pension funds that have basically been raided. We've got young people who just simply don't want anything to do with the government. We've got crypto and we've got blockchain in there. We've got you know, other technologies that could basically revolutionize energy. Forget about electric cars. There's other technologies that would just totally leapfrog that.
That sounds good.
And other things like the med beds, health technologies, and, You know, and once people get a taste of what they've been missing out on, oh my God, when that starts to spread, when the media veil starts to continue to slide down, it's going to be a very interesting time.
So I mean, one thing's certain is that the existing system's not going to go down without a fight. One of the ways that the central banks sell central bank digital currency is obviously around, tying it into a digital identification, and then convenience and, having all your information available and being able to transact really easily. In your mind, what are some of the risks? If everyone sat back and allowed governments to introduce central bank digital currencies, what do you see as a risk of that?
Oh, definitely, censorship issues, tracking, tracing. It's programmable money, so they can switch it on and off. It's all linked to their ESG goals, environmental sustainability goals, I think they call it. That's the climate change. So yeah. They don't want us buying certain things. They want to obviously channel us or herd us into an areas where we buy stuff that they deem appropriate, and so that's obviously not going to be good. We will be tracked. The technology they've got, they know exactly where you're spending it. They know where you're going, where you've been, how much you've got, and money could have a time frame. I've seen all the papers on it. It's not great. So this is where I think we will run, I believe, and there will be two kind of worlds sort of running. There will be a lot of people that will run to the CBDC. They will probably get a universal basic income. That's how they'll get it digitally.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people, when they've been wrecked, from losing their jobs and their homes and their businesses and all of that, they make people so dependent they're going to feel they have no choice, so they will accept it. It's poison chalice.
Yeah.
They'll probably make it okay at first. What they do is they push hard to see how far they can get it, and then they will ease back if there's a pushback. And they'll roll it out, but then over time, what they'll do is incrementally tighten the screw, and they rely on generations, fading out, dying off. Maybe they're helping to speed that up a little.
Yep.
And then they can work on the young. That's what I think they're trying to do. Is they're trying to work on the younger people because they are quite impressionable. A lot of them believe climate change, CO2. Carbon dioxide, climate change is a real thing. They could well take the bait.
Oh, there's certainly a lot of them will. I mean, if you're a 16 or 17-year-old kid and the government says, look, just sign up to this digital currency and we'll give you a couple of $100 a month for the privilege.
You probably wouldn't refuse it.
No, exactly.
However, people of our generation and from 40 up, that is a totally different ball game, and we're the ones who are doing most of the pushback. Is the baby boomers, and other people who have done reasonably well, but are fairly awake people who can make a difference because they have some resources. See, that's why I think money is always central to everything, because those who hold the money or control the money control the people, and. If you've got your own home and you've got connection to your own land, especially if you're debt-free, you have more freedom and more ability to make a difference than those who are completely dependent on the government.
Yeah.
And so that's why they don't want us. That's why I think the middle class are a threat to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure, and I think like a lot of my listeners are, that the less power we give the government, the better. And at some time, we actually started taking some of it back, because It's out of control. Just interestingly, though, you mentioned, you talked a couple of times about COVID. What's your views on the pandemic and how it started? I mean, and I guess the virus itself. Do you have any particular views on that?
Why don't I just, I'll just turn my light on because I've just noticed I'm starting to...
Getting dark.
Yeah, I actually knew something like COVID was coming about 10 years ago. And it's part of a plan, I think, to try and bring the population to heel so that they could bring in these plans of a one world government and a communist style kind of governance with total centralization and everything. And I think COVID was the forerunner to that. I believe it was released. It wasn't. It was created, virus in a lab. But I think some things didn't go the way they thought. I think it was supposed to be released in America. It was actually co-created with America, the Johns Hopkins Institute in China, but there were other interests involved. I mean, these people, that they don't see themselves as nationalists or of anyone. They just, I don't care about that. They're just very invisible kind of figures, shadowy figures in the background who really are pulling the strings. Those people you never see. But I think that the idea was to do that and then get as many people jabbed as possible for basically weakening the human spirit and weakening our DNA. They're targeting the DNA.
Yeah.
And then in a piece super 5G and electronics and metaverses and all the other things that they've got planned, it's an artificial transhumanism agenda.
Yeah. Yeah.
So biological, they don't want biological people. They want human kind of artificial intelligence created, because they're super obedient, follow the rules, that don't question, and just completely subservient.
What's amazed me is through this whole thing is exactly that, is the amount of people that have been completely obedient. And followed the government and the media line, hook, line, and sinker, and right from masks and vaccines and social distancing and staying up in your home and all of these things that a few years ago we would have thought would have been impossible and they could never pull that off, but people have just done it and gone along with it.
The pharmaceutical cartel is extremely powerful. They are an extremely powerful group. They get their way. They lobby the governments, and they get their way. That the TP. Remember the TPPA, and then it became the TPP. Then I knew then when I saw that document, and they said that, and the pharmaceutical companies were really pushing that hard. There was that whole thing about the governments not having the power. That the corporations would have the power, and look at it now.
Actually, I've forgotten about that.
Same thing.
Yeah.
You've just seen it play out in real time.
Yeah.
When I tried to blow the whistle on that, I had that many people that told me I was an absolute crackpot.
Yeah, I recall it actually, and I've completely forgotten about that. It was a big discussion at the time.
Who were trying to do that exact same thing?
Yeah.
A treaty that renders our governments powerless.
And they won't give up either.
No, they won't give up. So but I think there's enough people on this planet for them. And I think they will get some success, unfortunately. There's going to be some we're going to have to face the music at some stage. We're going to have to pay the price, you're going to pay the piper, as they say at some stage. And already we're seeing a gradual fallout, but they've done it very, very cleverly. They've done it so that your immune system is failing over time, and so then they can catch any kind of disease or illness even a common cold, and you can effectively die from that. When your immune system is defense is gone, then they could say, "Oh, you died of, you know, this, that, and the other thing," and they're trying to hide it.
Yeah, we see that already, don't we, with the long COVID and everything else that seems to cause heart attacks these days. Yeah, yep.
But it's all part of, I think, also they're trying to get ahead of us because they know that we're waking up. And I think they may have released it a little earlier than what they originally, I think 2030 was more their release date. And something made them do it earlier. I don't know quite what it was, but so I believe, and they might have rushed it a bit because I know it looks bad when you look at the news or you hear see what's happening. But I believe behind the scenes, there is so much pushback in so many places that the only reason they can keep it going is because they own so many resources. Again, it comes back to their money that is protecting them in the media. And yeah. And willing governments that have been very well trained, they're very, very united in their goal. They're almost fanatical about this. And somehow they've been able to control our government. You know, look at our Prime Minister. I mean, she's a complete puppet to that organization.
Yeah, a puppet and a muppet.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, it's clearly they've got a lot of reach. And because the fact that they own so much of the key resources and industries, they've kind of got us. They think they've got us where they want us. They think they've got us cornered. But I think they underestimate the human spirit and the awakening that's going on. And we only need 10% of that of a very united population to topple the rest, I believe.
Yeah. Probably about time we got on with it. And I think, I mean, when you talk about the politicians around the world all being in lockstep, I suppose, for want of a better word, when you see what's happened with the World Economic Forum and the global leaders, yes, it's hardly surprising, isn't it, that governments think the same when so many of them have been exposed to the same propaganda.
Yeah, it's mean. It just seems so obvious. I mean, I'm amazed at how many people still don't see it. However, I still believe that. I think it's coming down to a choice now. It's coming down to a choice. It's like timelines. You've heard about which timeline are you on? And now we got the opportunity to choose. Do we want to go down the line of biological life, nature, freedom, or do you want to go down this track where basically you can't do anything without, you know, Big Brother knowing about it? And do you want to be so controlled that, you know, you basically might as well be in, well, prison?
Yeah.
Prison without war. Yeah. So it's coming down to that. It's the gray area is slowly parting, and I think it's either black or white. You know, choose which path you're on.
Yeah.
Where are you going? And it's making people have to do a lot of soul searching, and it's tough. But if you look again in history, this has happened to humanity multiple times throughout history. It's just that now it's happening while we're here.
Yeah, it's and, lucky us.
And we've got a lot of us on the planet, so it's compounded by the fact that there's so many people that are, going to get caught up and they're going to get killed.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think we're definitely in for a... But it's time to make a decision, and it's also time for a reckoning. That's coming.
Yeah, coming. It's the reckoning. It's the tribulation. It's and I think later this year we will see it really break out open. I think, and then 2023 could be a very tumultuous year. Supply chains and food shortages and severe poverty, money shortages in many areas, even with people that never had money issues before. So to me, when it comes down to blockchain and crypto, I think, well, what else is there that could help us to get out of this mess other than going into the forest, living in a hut, having, you know, getting completely off the grid and foraging for our own food? What other things could we do to try and get out of this matrix mess? And, you know, I think, well, we've got the blockchain, so we should explore it more. People shouldn't just be so quick to dismiss it. They think, oh, yeah, the cabal will just do, you know, they'll just usurp it and they'll control it for their own interests. But not if enough of us participate in it, they won't. People tend to get quite, you know, negative very quickly and give up. And to me, that kind of mentality is a bit self-defeatist.
Yeah.
I think we have to rise up. We have to grab something by the horns and we have to make it work. And I've been in blockchain long enough. It's working for me. I mean, it has helped me immensely. And when we start getting our control of our data, I mean, that's ultimately what it's like. This is the new oil is our data, our intellectual property, our information, our creativity. That's what really is our power. And if blockchain can protect that, if we can have decentralized ID where no central party can see it, when it goes into a complete vault, but it passes a test, you know, to prove that it's you as a human, which is very important because the whole system is filled with bots, you know, these non-human robots, AI, it's everywhere. So we need some form of identification, but it doesn't have to be, you know, where, you know, the current system where it's just going to a centralized point and then being used against us.
I guess one of the things I'm really keen on, and one of the things we've certainly been exploring is local communities doing things for themselves. So, you know, we talk about local gardens and potentially local power stations. And I guess it's that decentralization of our infrastructure and smaller communities. And I guess that's where the decentralized blockchains and currencies actually come in as well. And I know I've taken up quite a bit of your time, but you talked a little while ago about local currency and using blockchain. I just want to explore that a little bit more and also what people could actually do to I guess, put something behind it because, you know, the value needs to be backed up by something. And how would local communities actually achieve that?
Well, the particular project that I'm involved in, the currency is actually anchored to gold. The highest price of gold. So it's got a solid thing. So that makes it very non-volatile. A lot of the algorithms are based on the buying and selling, and that's where the cabal can control that really easily. The central bank can control that. But when the algorithms link to gold, well, gold's a pretty stable, even though that is also manipulated. You know, the price is very consistent. And then you've got a benchmark because gold is far more tangible and it's been money for 5,000 years. So it holds, it's held its value all that time. Imagine a fiat currency 5,000 years ago to the price of gold now. And, you know, the fiat's long gone, right? Yep. But the gold's still here and it still has value. So there's something in that. And then what this can do is local communities are now galvanizing around this, and we are finding the merchants, we're finding growers, we're finding stores that want to sell necessities initially and building materials, and buyers can buy the token. It's called TPR, and the project is called The People's Choice. So they buy their crypto and you store it in a blockchain, and it's like it's a medium of exchange that holds its value because it's non-volatile, it's pegged to gold, but also the network. It means if we can get access to food and necessities, that's pretty good, right? So that's Absolutely. Going to keep its price up because it's been used in the world. That's what cryptos that are, like you said, other than the fact that they're tied to real-world assets, they have a use case that is actually serving and it has utility, those are the tokens that are going to really do well. And the People's Choice is setting out to achieve that. They have what's called a native blockchain, which means it's not connected to Bitcoin's code or Ethereum or any of those other. This is a, like a ground up built blockchain from scratch, which means it's a walled garden for us. It's our garden, not theirs. It's right. A big difference. So we need, sometimes you need to put the walls up a bit. But if we've got the people in the middle, and then we've got protection, and then we can it's like almost like a barter token. Don't even need the internet to use it.
Okay.
You can use, if you've got it on your phone, you've got Bluetooth, you just need Bluetooth, and the merchant holds a QR code, and you just scan it off that. You don't need the internet to do that. So it could literally work even if the power goes down or internet goes off.
Right.
And there's a lot of strong communities coming around this token. Even it started in Israel, and Israel's got 200,000 people. They created their own community very fast after the lockdowns and the jab, and Israel got hit hard.
Yep.
200,000 people that came together and formed their like Voices for Freedom, but on a bigger scale. And then they started bartering, but they needed a currency. You've got to have a medium of exchange. That's what money's supposed to do. It's supposed to be an exchange of energy, exchange of goods for the token.
Yep.
And they found TPR, and now they've installed that, and then boom, they hit the ground running. Now they've got their economy, and it's flourishing. And in Australia, it went there next, flourishing over there as well. The people, you know, they say necessity is the mother of all invention. Well, they've adopted it hugely, particularly on the eastern seaboard, where they've been hard hit with storms and rain and lockdowns. And so they're banding together. And the other beauty thing I like about it is it's not a company behind it, it's just scooping on the product profit. They're putting 50% of all they make goes back into the economy. So they're front-end loading.
All right. Okay.
And this is why I think that something like this with the Voices for Freedom groups, if they all united and we all adopted this kind of currency, we could effectively be just go to a finger to the government. We don't need you.
Yeah.
And I think if the system does come down, the price of gold is only going to go up even higher. So that makes that comes in why inflation cannot hit crypto as well, because you have a limited supply. Inflation comes through infinite supply of money. Because it's a limited supply of tokens, that's deflationary, which means that's good for us because our money goes further. But you're also holding something that is a digital asset which can appreciate in value maybe over time, as well as being a currency. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, sounds great.
And then the communities can flourish around that on something that's invisible, in a sense. It's invisible. They say it's digital, so it has no real use case. But, yeah, it can. It just has to be adopted, created in the right way and adopted by enough people, and then, boom, it's off.
I certainly didn't realise that there was so much happening in the space. So it's quite heartening to hear that it is being adopted, and it's certainly going to be a fascinating watch to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, there's 400 million people who hold crypto.
Is that right?
So that's around about 3.5-4% of the population of the world. But the adoption rate in New Zealand and Australia is around 20% hold crypto. But that is growing at 110% year on year. It has been since Bitcoin came out. It's been growing over 100% every year for 12 years straight. So that means next year we're going to have something like 800 million people that's a serious contender for a new reality.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been absolutely fascinating. Look, before I let you go, is there anything else that you'd like to touch on? Anything that you haven't mentioned?
Well, we've covered quite a lot.
Well, yeah, it's been fascinating.
Sorry, it's been a bit rambly sometimes. I know there's so much information, and sometimes I go off on because you capture, there's so much information to capture and channel. But just the people out there, don't lose hope. There is a lot of things happening. Don't write Bitcoin off just because of don't write crypto off just because of Bitcoin or because of the CBDC. There is a lot of other things happening because you don't see it, you don't realize it, because obviously the media don't give any coverage to that. But for people like us, who I'm an educator, we're a community builder, we see it at the coalface, and I'm communicating with people all around the world. And honestly, there's some very inspiring stuff happening.
Yep.
So don't give up.
Fantastic.
Don't think of it as the crypt, and you know, people say, oh, crypt, that's the dead, you know, no thanks.
I heard that before.
That's only one way to spin it.
Yeah, I guess ultimately right now people are faced with a choice in the next few years. Either they go down the CBDC route or they do something else. So it's certainly worth looking at what that something else might be. Your DeFi Freedom, do you only take New Zealand customers or you worldwide?
We've got people all around the world now.
Yeah, fantastic. So, again, that's DeFi Freedom, which is DeFiFreedom.nz. Yeah, encourage everyone to have a look. Fantastic.
If people want to get an annual membership, there's a 22% discount if people were interested. They could just, message me or...
How do they reach you, Tony?
I'm going to bring the flyer up. There's actually, when we do the... presentation and walk with, I'm going to have a flyer with a code that people can scan and then it's instant. If they message me on email me defifreedomnz@gmail.com and I can send them the link.
Thank you. That will be brilliant. And we'll put that into the show notes as well. Fantastic. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Tony.
Awesome, Alan. Great to meet you.
You too. Thank you.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Factually Speaking with your host, Alan Campbell. Please subscribe, and if you want to sponsor or comment on the show, reach out at factuallyspeaking@yahoo.com. This was Factually Speaking, the show where facts matter more than feelings.